Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm super excited because this is one of my very favorite shows of the year to record. This is our summer retrospective, so naturally I'm joined by Doug.
Hi.
And JB.
I'm going to pop some tabs. I've got $20 in my pocket.
This is, I think, the third year in a row that we've done our summer show.
In a row. We did do two and then skip a year and then pick it up again.
We've only been around for three. So we have done this every year of the podcast, basically. I am going to try my hardest not to be miserable on this show because I didn't like a lot of movies this summer.
You've taken a vow not to throw up a little into our own mouths or into each other's mouths.
Oh, that I didn't. I didn't. you can find our website at fthismovie.net, and you should, or you should follow us on Twitter. We're at fthismovie. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie, and email us your show suggestions, your feedback, your dreams, your hopes, your fears.
fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com.
No wishes. No
just
wishes.
Dreams and fears?
Leave wishes to yourself, or they don't come true.
Hey, talk about iTunes. People should leave reviews.
Oh, it's this thing. You download it, and then there's all these songs on there. You can buy songs.
I've seen Jobs. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, if you're a fan of the show, and you can
take Jobs,
you can take a few seconds to go to iTunes and give us a positive star rating, a positive review. It helps our show do better. It helps people find our show. We really appreciate it. Those of you who have done it already. We really, really appreciate you taking the time to do that and your support of the show.
I would also recommend that everyone spread the gospel of F This Movie by sharing the show on any social media and or social website that you can think of.
Yes.
Dig or stumble upon or
right.
Reddit.
I mean, right. if there was this article that you liked and you read it, and you were like, you wanted to tell people that you read it,
right?
You should tell people that
right.
You read it.
Absolutely. So do that, will you? Please.
Are you guys talking platforms?
All right, let's get into the summer, boys.
Very quickly.
All right.
I believe I can summarize the summer.
Yes.
I can summarize the summer.
Summarize.
In less than 60 seconds. Are you ready? Somebody
okay.
tell
hold
me.
On, hold, on, hold on, hold on.
I got to wait for it to come back around.
Okay, somebody tell me to go.
55 more seconds. Hold on.
Yeah.
53 more seconds. Oh, I can just do it from here. Just start.
Summer of 2013, go. Great Gatsby, ugh. Hangover 3, ugh. Disconnect, ugh. Man of Steel, ugh. Now You See Me, ugh. Shadow Dancer, ugh, ugh. White House Down, ugh. Lone Ranger, ugh, ugh, ugh. Star Trek, In the Darkness, ugh. The Way, Way Back, ugh. Two Guns, ugh. We're the Millers, ugh, ugh. Lovelace, ugh. Kick-Ass 2, ugh, ugh, ugh. Jobs, ugh. The Canyons, ugh. That's the summer.
That was not even close to 60 seconds.
No, you still got some time left over.
Yeah, so do you want to barf in my mouth some more?
Go ahead and use it however you like.
Well, there's a couple films I liked.
Those are JB's sex sounds, by the way.
By that, do you mean the physical act of love?
Is there any other kind?
So there's a good place to start. You said you saw some movies you liked. Let's talk about some stuff that you liked this summer.
Let's start positive, shall we?
Yeah.
Iron Man 3, not a disaster.
Yeah. The more movies I saw this summer and the less I liked
Book of Eli effect.
The more I was like, well, Iron Man 3 was pretty good. I mean, I still don't love it, but it was fine. It was pretty good.
We were extra harsh on the podcast, I think, because we had high expectations for all
and
the
it was coming right out of the gate.
Oh, absolutely.
It was like, well, this is going to be a great summer. Let's not set the bar too high, everyone.
Let's not give this 4 stars.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it doesn't deserve 4 stars, but still, like when Pacific Rim has so much promise.
Yeah, exactly. it's not that everything that came out was horrible. It's just that I feel like most of the big movies, mm-hmm. like the blockbusters, either under-delivered or were horrible.
Yeah.
But then, to compound things, there were lots of small indie films that were annoying with their terribleness. Taking indie twee to a whole other thing. I would argue, though, best comic book movie of the summer, I think, was Wolverine, all things considered.
I think I would agree with that. I kind of want to see Iron Man 3 again, just because the last act of Wolverine continues to bother me.
And the last act of Iron Man 3 doesn't?
No, because Gwyneth Paltrow fell off the thing, I felt it!
Yeah.
That's the thing I still
can't... I felt it in my peltries.
By the way, you're going to be spoiling some summer movies.
The minute we got to the end of Wolverine,
yeah.
I thought it was channeling the end of the first Iron Man. Why does every movie now have to have a robot that fights?
I don't know.
Is this the hangover from Transformers, if I can mix the metaphors?
I don't know.
It's nuts.
Well, you know,
there's a robot at the end of the world's end.
Yeah. There's a character in the Wolverine comic book series called the Silver Samurai, and unfortunately now, it's very weird because movie studios or the people responsible for these comic book movies, they're willing to go so far with their comic bookness. But then there's certain things that they shy away from. Like, well, people will buy the guy with the claws that come out of his hands, and he can't die. He can regenerate. And there's this underground layer, and this girl has a snaky tongue, and she shoots green mist at people. But nobody's going to buy a guy, a samurai in silver armor. Let's make him a big robot.
Snickety snoink.
Snickety, snickety snoink. So Iron Man 3, pretty good.
Yeah.
Star Trek Into Darkness for me remains maybe the biggest disappointment of the summer, only because I like Star Trek. I liked the 2009 movie.
Let me just say this about the summer. I feel like, yeah, were there a lot of big promises that studios made with their big movies? Of course there were.
Yeah.
Did a lot of these movies let you down?
Yes.
I think the answer is yes.
Correct.
And did are my expectations lowered for the future? Of course they are. But I don't know where I was going with this.
You succeeded in really depressing me.
But yeah. There's got to be a bright side somewhere, right?
It's hard to be excited about movies right now.
Is there
really
hope
is.
In life? Is there any answer to our meaningless existence?
No, but to what you said, I'm having a hard time getting excited about especially big movies right now.
I see little teasers or posters for like the Winter Soldier. And I'm excited a little bit because I like the first Captain America. And I'm hearing about Avengers 2. And I liked Avengers fine, and that was obviously last summer or last spring. No, it was last summer.
It was last summer, yeah.
But yeah, there's so little that kind of you could sink your teeth into this year that give you hope or promise for the future.
Yeah.
Even the biggest movie news based on this summer's movie offerings is probably the Batman-Superman movie, and the Superman was so bad.
And people are already shitting on the Batman-Superman
for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
They're upset that Ben Affleck is playing Batman. That's not the problem with Batman vs. Superman. The problem with Batman vs. Superman is the movie itself. You have a movie. Man of Steel was maybe the third or fourth highest grossing movie of the summer and probably the year. A lot of people really loved it. And yet, somehow, there's still this mentality that it underperformed. So let's stick Batman in the next one because that's the way we get to $1 billion.
And the minute they announced it was Affleck, I went back to that really old, bitter Batman from, who was it?
My dad.
There was one comic book or graphic novel series. Again, you're much better with comic books than I am. It might have been the...
The Dark Knight Returns?
Right. Not the Christopher Nolan films,
right.
But that really...
The Dark Knight Returns.
The old Batman who's past his prime.
Yes.
And that I thought maybe they picked Affleck because they want Affleck to play that.
Yeah, that was the way that it was sort of set up. Not specifically Affleck, but when they made the announcement at Comic-Con, they read passages from The Dark Knight Returns because there are scenes between Batman and Superman.
Ooh, a reading at Comic-Con?
Anyway, we're off topic.
We are. They were talking about the summer.
So that there is hope. Let's talk about some things in the summer that were good.
Okay.
Iron Man 3.
Pretty good.
Not bad.
My favorite comedy this summer was that one with Seth Rogen. And I can't think of
the end.
This is the end.
And I got to say, maybe because of your highness, I had very low expectations. But that's actually shaping up to be one of my favorite movies of the year.
Possibly mine as well.
I just thought it was actually a movie, that it wasn't a concept that
right.
sort of... That you could tell they spent a lot of time on the first 20 minutes, and then the rest of it is just nonsense.
That's what it looked like in the previews, right. For sure. Yeah, that's how it was sold.
That I was so impressed that they could sustain this rather sweet story,
yeah.
Really,
they're
given
actually
how much nonsense they're
re-releasing it, I believe, this coming weekend.
This Saturday, it reopens in theaters, because I guess they figured
they
got lost in the shuffle.
No, they were like $2 or $3 million shy of $100 million.
Oh.
It's the same reason that World War Z...
That's crazy.
Just came out again as a double feature with Star Trek Into Darkness because World War Z was about 4 million shy of 200 million. If you get to 200 million, you can charge a lot more for cable to buy your movie. No.
Because if there's, I want to spend.
I was just wondering why the arbitrary
7 hours in a theater with World War Z and Star Trek
with
and the
two
Darkness.
Disappointing
right,
movies.
And long,
Where the world ends. And that was.
Where the world ends.
That was obviously, it's been talked about a lot on this podcast, on this site, and other places throughout the summer, that was the theme for the summer, that everything was destroyed. Man of Steel, World War Z, Star Trek Into Darkness. At least this is the end and the world's end, both of which deal with sort of literally the end of the world, not just the destruction of a city, managed to do it without feeling bleak and nihilistic and are actually sort of hopeful in a way.
Very. Also, before
those
I forget,
two did it the best.
I took Adam's advice, and last weekend I went to see The World's End a second time.
Okay.
That movie is so clever and dense and well thought out. I couldn't believe the stuff I missed the first time. In fact, I'd tell you one of those things, but then I'd have to hide my head in shame. In fact, it was after the movie. My lovely wife and I were having lunch, and my wife said, you know, this, and this. And I was like, oh.
Say it.
Yeah, what's the thing?
We're in spoilers. Yeah.
But this is going to be like Cyrus, and I'm going to be embarrassed for years.
Was it their last names? Was it the names of the bars?
No.
I didn't pick up the names of the bars until I read about it the following weekend.
Okay, I have read nothing, but again, sitting at lunch, I started to form an idea.
Yeah. If nothing, I mean, just a general 30,000 foot, that's right.
Yeah.
The movie is dense. Every single
all of their movies are like that.
It is so deliberate. Every word you hear, every location, every single thing
so
means something.
There is a connection between the name of the bar and what happens
every
in that segment.
One of them. Yes. Right.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Here's an example. Like the second bar is the Old Familiar. It's the exact same bar as the first bar.
That's okay. So
yeah.
And then the bar that's named after a rooster.
It's the good cock or whatever.
Is that where he has the assignation with the sister?
No, that's the one he couldn't get in. He's kicked out. He's
being a cock.
For being a cock.
Yeah. Okay. It's very clever. Promise not to make fun of me. Major spoiler for the world.
Okay. Everyone who hasn't seen the
world
tune out.
Ends.
For 5 seconds.
At the very end of the film, we see that Simon Pegg is wearing a hospital bracelet, and I felt that meant that he had simply escaped rehab.
Oh.
But then Jan pointed out that's why he didn't want to show them.
Right.
He tried to kill himself.
Right.
I missed that both times.
Really? Both times?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I got that more, not for so much from the hospital bracelet, but he had pretty severe bandages, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you liked it a lot better the second time?
A whole lot better. And again, I really, really liked it the first time.
Yeah, I know.
But again, and someone commented on the last podcast, if it's great, you cannot take it in one viewing.
No.
Or maybe I can't take it in one viewing because I'm not very bright.
But just today I was reading this interview with Rob Zombie about why he loves the movie Paradise Alley. And he made this point that every time...
That article is written just for you.
every time he comes out with a new album, people's first response is, I don't like this as much as your last album. He says, of course you don't. You've lived with my last album for 5 years.
Exactly.
You've lived with this one for a week.
That's why I feel like Snoop Lion is getting such a big backlash for his reggae stuff, because they want the rap. And it's like, just live with his reggae stuff for a little bit.
But that's the world's end. Our inclination is to figure out, how does this stack up against the other two movies?
God.
The movies that we've lived with for 10 years.
Every single thing I read was just like, here's how I'm ranking them.
Right.
This one's first, this one's second.
And I feel like it's too soon to call it the best, but it's also too soon to call it the worst.
And there's no ranking. We have three films
that
are so incredible compared to almost any... just be thankful you have three.
Yeah.
Would you consider that movie a comedy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because you said your favorite comedy of the year was This Is the End.
Hmm. I think I laughed the most in This Is the End.
Right, okay.
I think The World's End is a better movie.
Gotcha.
Yes, and the second time I saw The World's End, it was with a much better audience.
Oh, yeah.
That laughed a lot more, because there's some jokes in that movie, The World's End, that are very funny.
Yeah.
And in some cases, very subtle.
Most cases, I think the best jokes are the subtlest ones, where it goes so fast, and you're like, wait, I don't want to laugh, because I'm going to miss the next joke.
I rewatched Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz the day or two before The World's End came out, and was sitting by myself in my basement laughing out loud to Shaun of the Dead. At jokes I remembered, no, at right. jokes that felt brand new. I mean, it's so goddamn funny.
Oh, and before we leave World's End, something else that Jan thought was really interesting. The film begins at an AA meeting, and Simon Pegg is telling a story about the past to a small circle of people. Mm-hmm. And she thought it was very interesting that at the end of the movie, Nick Frost mm-hmm. is telling a story about what happened in the past to a small group of people.
This dense.
Nothing is a mistake.
What else did you like? Is that what you're still on? Or yeah.
Fast and Furious 6.
Are we done with that?
In terms of like blockbuster movies, because World's End was actually kind of a smaller movie. You right. know, it got a big release. But in terms of big blockbuster movies, I felt like the only one that delivered completely was Fast and Furious 6.
I agree, completely.
That movie's awesome. It is ridiculous in all the best ways. It has characters that are, like, sort of drawn. I mean, they're not, like, complex or particularly interesting, but you know the characters by now. You sort of understand how they behave and their relationships.
Yeah, you know, like, Han loves to eat.
It wasn't insulting in its stupidity. It embraced its stupidity and allowed you to laugh with it instead of at it. And I thought it was super entertaining.
Do you think, now, just to that point about with it versus at it, do you yes. think that movie definitely knows, like, does every person in that movie know the kind of movie they're making?
I still contend it's everyone except for Vin Diesel.
Okay. Because I was going to say, is it like a Starship Troopers thing where that movie's awesome and no one knows what movie they're in?
It's hard to say, honestly. Yeah. I think a couple of people, I think, like, Dwayne Johnson knows the movie that he's in.
Sure.
I think maybe Paul Walker and Vin Diesel are still playing it like they played the first one. I don't know. But right. I know Justin Lin knew the movie he was making, and that goes a long way.
Starship Troopers, it was only Verhoeven.
Yes, right. absolutely.
Who yeah. had the whole equation.
and possibly Neil Patrick Harris.
And everyone's smiling the entire yeah. time. Is, yeah. yeah, it's great.
So great. And now I hear that Kurt Russell might be in Fast and Furious 7.
Yeah, I just read that.
So all of my worlds are coming together.
On a side note.
Yes. Gabby Hoffman's in that too.
I get out of town!
Speaking of Gabby Hoffman, am I the only one who saw Crystal Fairy and the Magic Cactus?
Yes!
I've seen scenes of it. I've seen video captures and GIF files of the movie you're talking about, and maybe a scene on Metacafe or Daily Motion.
And to quote a joke from Seth Rogen about Sarah Silverman, you thought Gabby Hoffman was a liberal. Turns out she's a huge Bush supporter. Anyway, you were saying about Crystal Fairy?
I get that joke because I've also seen video caps and GIF files of that movie.
It's very good. I would recommend it. It's.
I avoided it because it just seemed like 2 hours of people on drugs.
No, that's not what it is at all.
Okay.
It only played for a week at the Music Box. The other thing I just wanted to point out about this summer is, if you looked around, it was actually a really good summer for documentaries. The Music Box showed Deceptive Practices, the Ricky Jay story, which is amazing, and I would say seek that out on, it's obviously out of theaters now, but maybe on demand or on some sort of streaming service. And I went to see 20 Feet from Stardom,
yes,
which is about backup singers in the rock and roll industry. And what could have been awful and was almost spoiled by, we have time for this, right?
Sure.
We went to see it at one of those theaters where you have dinner, and 20 minutes into the film, these people came in horribly drunk and making, it was like a little party. And it was very strange. And even though it's assigned seating, we kind of moved down because it wasn't crowded. Yeah. And they just kept it up. And eventually someone complained and a manager came and asked to see their tickets. And they didn't have tickets. And then when the movie let out, we saw them playing pool in the restaurant part. And it turns out they thought it was this place where you go to drink. They thought it was like a bar, and then whenever you want, you could just go see a movie for 20 minutes. They thought that was like, well, you can play pool or see 20 minutes of...
Of the backup singer documentary? That's the one they picked? Like, that's so weird.
I can't imagine backup singers. The neurons and the synapses in a person's brain to think, that's my first thought. I'm going to go and just walk into whatever movie I want. That would never dawn on me. And I'm a weirdo.
And for some reason, because they had drinks and food, they thought...
Oh, sure, I'm buying from here, so this allows me there.
True, but what I mean is they thought very much like they were in their living room.
Right.
That they were talking about it, the film. Just anyway, it's a measure of the success of the film that we were still able to enjoy it. The filmmakers go so much the nine yards because
the whole 9 yards.
It's obvious the film took a really long time to make, and the people they interviewed are really the people you want to talk to, because in a lot of cases, these backup singers had tried for a solo career and failed.
Oh, sure.
And then, and I don't think this is a spoiler, at the end, they got them all back together in a studio and, like, recorded a number with all of them. So it was like, well, that's kind of nice that they didn't just, you know, run around with a two-person crew and do the talking head interviews. That there's a lot of music in the film. Mary Clayton tells this incredible story about recording the backup vocals to Gimme Shelter. Very much worth your time. It's really, really good, and all the music is great.
Cool.
I was just so wishing that they would bring them all back to do a number and then say, like, but still have them sing back up and be like, okay, bring in Bruce Springsteen.
You know, it's interesting. I once saw Flo and Eddie, who were the brain trust behind the Turtles. And in the 70s and 80s, they had this cottage industry of doing, they have beautiful voices that blend, and they do a lot of backing vocals on a lot of pop hits. Hmm. When you see Flo and Eddie live, like at neighborhood festivals, they do a medley of the songs they've done backup on and only do the backup vocals. So the band, literally, they're the background vocals on Springsteen's Hungry Heart. Yeah. You mentioned Springsteen.
Yeah.
There's no lead vocal when they do the song. Cool. It's just their backing vocal. It's the greatest thing you've ever heard. And there's one other documentary. I'm sorry, two other documentaries. Men in Suits, which Adam and I saw at G-Fest and then had a limited release and a DVD release. And there's one. Oh, I wrote about it today. It's called Good Old Frida. And this podcast lands on Wednesday. 2 days later, it will be on iTunes and video on demand. And in fact, Sal already commented that he's going to see it at his local movie theater this Saturday. I can't recommend that film a lot. So a good summer for documentary.
That's good.
You can't recommend it a lot?
I can't recommend it enough.
Gotcha.
And
does Nova Scotia have movie theaters?
Again, like I said,
Your igloos.
I had such a big special reaction to it that I'm hoping now other people...
Sure.
Won't see it and go, what?
That's always the risk when you kind of go out on a limb for something before anybody else gets a chance to see it, and then you just wait and cross your fingers.
So once again, my big, big heart will be bruised.
Douglas, did you have a favorite movie of the summer?
Fast and Furious 6 was great. Your Next was great.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
That might be my favorite movie of the summer.
I mean, to your point, and I didn't see nearly as many movies as everyone else. I feel like I saw most of the blockbusters, and I really missed a lot of the indie movies, which, according to JB here, it seems like a lot of them were annoying and not maybe worth your time. So I missed a lot of that stuff, but I did see pretty much every big thing, and Your Next is probably the smallest thing I saw, based strongly on your recommendation.
Yeah.
And I went into it with an open mind, and I laughed a lot more than I thought I would for a horror movie. And it's a great kind of movie that, and you've talked about this a lot in your review, check out Patrick's review on the website, where it knows what it's doing, just like we do. We know what we're doing. It knows what it's doing. It's subversive. It's playing with the genre, but it's also a legit, genuine, scary horror movie. And it's just great.
Yeah.
I actually thought, looking back, that Your Next, given the way they decided to remake Evil Dead, Your Next is what Evil Dead should have been. Because the way they reconfigured Evil Dead, it was a lot like Your Next.
In some ways, it just gets to a certain point way too late in the movie. Evil Dead, I'm talking about.
I thought, for indie films, I think there were three that were not annoying protuberances.
Okay.
Frances Ha continues to grow on me.
I did not see it.
And
meeps, mops.
I thought, my son's 23, and I really thought it gave me insight into the social milieu that he's in that I have never been a part of and never will, and what life is like in terms of romance for people in their early 20s. Also, I just found out it's getting a Criterion release.
Yeah.
So there.
He's in that Wes Anderson category where the movie debuts from Criterion.
Crazy. And again, as I think back on it.
Who made it?
Noah Baumbach.
Noah Baumbach.
Oh, yeah.
It grows on me. Much Ado About Nothing was really delightful. And obviously, I'm an English teacher. I love Shakespeare, but it really did it well.
Is it Joss Whedon?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And he filmed it over a couple weekends at his house.
With his friends.
It's black and white, right?
Yeah.
No, thanks.
So is Francis Ha.
Francis Ugg.
It's really, really good. It's worth your time.
Francis Ha. I don't think so.
Francis Grapp. I'm just making no sense now.
And even though it's not an unqualified success, the more I think about it, I think there's more in the spectacular now that works than doesn't.
I would agree with that.
I would recommend it with reservations, and remind me, when the podcast is over, I'm not going to spoil this. I have a question for you about the Spectacular Now.
Okay. There's a lot I liked about Spectacular Now. Really good acting from the two leads. I thought the photography was really, really, really gorgeous. It's a very well-directed movie. I, too, have some issues with it.
Listen, if this movie is my go-to, if I haven't seen something, I like to read your reviews and you know, listen to podcasts. Yeah. But more
it
than
gets
that,
a thumbs up.
But more than that,
I just copyright
Taco Bell TV reviewed Spectacular Now when I was in there eating my.
They gave it
Mexican
four
melts.
Doritos Locos tacos.
They did, and it was not Cool Ranch, which is sometimes qualified. They in their 19 seconds that they devoted to Spectacular Now, the guy said, "See it." So I think I'll
what
have
is
you.
Your attitude about the Spectacular Now? I'm Cool Ranch on the Spectacular.
This
Now.
Movie lives. Mas.
I thought Adam nailed it, although one of the things we took away, because we just saw it last weekend, was Bob Odenkirk is so good in that movie.
Yeah.
And he's not in
he's
it.
Two or three scenes.
Much. But the one confrontation scene is...
He actually might be the only adult in the movie that gives a good performance, because I have issues with Jennifer Jason
That's
Leigh.
Why I've always said, yo quiero Bob Odenkirk.
And Kyle Chandler? Is that...
The guy from Friday Night Lights?
Yeah.
Okay. Kyle Chandler, that whole sequence reeks of, I can give you 2 days.
Yeah. And it was good to see him not playing a stern, like, FBI agent or a military dad or the same thing he's played in every movie. Yeah.
I think one of the aspects of a good performance or a great performance is that it surprises us in some ways. And I really had a problem with Chandler because the minute he opens that apartment door...
Yeah.
We know what this is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You saw a bunch of indie movies that you liked.
I saw a couple other ones that, Blue Jasmine, I don't know if that counts as an indie movie, and we kind of talked about it on the podcast last week, but that's very good.
Yeah.
Drinking Buddies, I liked.
Adam wrote a review on that. He liked that, right?
It's and slight, but well acted.
There's a lot to like.
Yeah. Joe Swanberg, right?
My BFF. Hmm.
See, this is where I run into trouble, because the list that I'm holding in my left hand
is just stuff you saw in a theater.
His right. Dixon is right.
Oh, you jumped right to it. I was going to be like subtle and say, hey, guys, don't tell them what's in my right. But
a penis. No, it's a penis.
I can see it from here. It's very purple.
Doug Schultz.
Eats up on the grip, purple dick.
Doug Schultz, king of the single entendre.
Kings of Summer came out this summer, which I saw back in April and liked when I saw it. And then the more I think about it, the more I'm like, is that movie good? I can't remember.
But the other one you saw at that...
is currently available on demand and in limited release right now. It's called I Declare War.
And that's the one you really liked.
Loved it.
And I kept waiting for it to come out.
It's on demand right now.
In theaters.
Okay, but you could go watch it on demand.
Which is the one that Kevin Smith loves?
Red State. I don't. Is there one that he loves?
Yeah, there's one of these independent movies that you had seen at the thing you went to where he... Like,
oh, yeah. I know the one. It hasn't come out yet.
It's The Bully. It's
the
about
dirties.
Bullies.
The Dirties.
The Dirties.
It's getting a video
but
on
you reviewed
release.
That also for the thing. Okay. Did you like that movie? Because you reviewed
I did.
It.
It's coming out in October on demand.
I was offered free tickets to every screening at the Chicago Film Critics Association thing.
Yes.
And my friend described all the movies to me.
Yeah.
And I said... I have no interest in seeing any of those. And then Patrick's reviews roll out, and I'm like, oh!
Spectacular Now was one of the movies. I chose to see I Declare War instead. And I'm glad I did, but now I've gotten to see Spectacular Now 2, which is great.
I will next year, if they're going to repeat it, right?
I would assume so, but I don't know.
Now I've learned my lesson.
Yeah.
And I will stay away a second time.
And I'll still avoid it.
J-Bones, what was your favorite movie of the summer?
Just for all...
The Purge.
Look, it's not very good.
This is your defense of The Purge?
I will defend The Purge. It's coming out on home video as well. I thought it was workmanlike. I had a good time. It got the job done. There were a couple things I liked. The whole class struggle thing. I had fun. I'm not claiming it's great. I think the most fun at the movies this summer was This Is the End.
Yeah.
I think the best drama? Mud.
Okay. I still haven't seen Mud.
Really like Mud. You could tell as you can...
Is Mud a summer movie?
Yeah. June 16th.
Oh. It's on demand. Why the fuck didn't I see it?
I'm beginning to think that most movies...
I'll be right back.
Are pitched to such a lowest common denominator, and you know Patrick's famous saying, you can see the different color script pages, that when you go see something that's based on a novel, you can tell. Like when I sat through Spectacular Now, I thought, this is a book. This is a book. You can tell. And Mud is very literary. But it's really good.
Yeah. I still need to see it.
In a weird way, it reminded me of To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah.
Although it bears no resemblance to Kill. Actually, it does a little bit. It's a coming-of-age story where these...
In the South.
Yeah, these kids interact with this mysterious man and learn something about life.
Okay.
And it keeps surprising you, and Matthew McConaughey, who'd have thunk? I mean, just one after another.
Yeah,
he's got this new
so
one coming out that everyone's excited about, and... I've seen the trailer for The Wolf of Wall Street.
Do you laugh every time at the end? Because I do. When he does that weird chant, it makes me laugh every single time.
I mentioned this last week. Jan was away at a business. Was away at this conference, and I had nothing better to do, so I really went movie crazy. And I think I've seen The Wolf of Wall Street trailer 25 times.
It's a good trailer.
And at all. The music they chose?
Yeah.
Man, I want to see it. But at the end, Matthew McConaughey... What would you call that?
I don't know. It's a weird...
A little chant?
Yeah.
Every audience I've ever seen it with, it just, it's batshit crazy, and then it gets crazier and crazier and crazier, and then he makes that little noise at the end.
He, like, kind of burps. It's very strange.
And then he makes DiCaprio do it, too, which is another joke within the joke.
Any other high points we want to talk about before we start complaining about...
The Getaway, for sure.
I didn't see it's Just Getaway. Just Getaway.
The Getaway? Is that a movie?
The Getaway is a movie that's been made twice.
About that.
Sam Peckinpah, and then they remade it with Alec Baldwin and Kim Basinger.
And there was a rumor that when they filmed the love scene,
they
was really doing it.
Oh, it's what led to their divorce.
I was just going to say that one. About every 10 years, you get one.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
I've seen scenes of The Getaway, I believe. Long Naomi Watts-esque nipples.
Animated GIFs. Very quickly, before we leave stuff that was good, I just want to put in another word. I mentioned this last week. In a World was a great surprise and proof that a movie can be a whole bunch of things, and it doesn't have to just be one through line. The sort of the setting and the subtext could be a big part of it, and it's great.
I'm a fan of the Lake Bell.
Writer, director Lake Bell?
Writer, director, actress.
New York Magazine cover girl.
A couple of pleasant surprises, I thought. I thought Monsters University was actually a pleasant surprise because it seemed hacky, you know. A prequel to Monsters, Inc., a movie I'm not super crazy about. But I thought it did a really good job of being a funny sort of college comedy. It had interesting things to say to kids. Pixar, you know, sometimes is able to sneak in sort of adult messages that kids should maybe hear. I liked it
a lot.
You're
a big Billy Crystal fan, though, too.
Listen.
Anything he does. You'll
Mr. Saturday Night, boom.
My Giant,
boom.
First in Line.
Forget Paris, boom. Father's Day, boom.
Keep going.
I will not.
On a complete tangent.
Yeah, here we go.
The serious station that plays stand-up comedy?
Yeah. There's like four.
Raw Dog.
Okay.
Oh, that's the worst one.
Yeah.
I've been listening to that lately. Was Robin Williams ever funny?
No.
Did he trick people into... Mm-hmm. He was...
Well, he was coked out of his mind and stealing jokes, and so people thought he was funny. I want to hate Robin Williams.
You listen to it now, though, and it's...
No.
It's crazy.
I think people were swept up by his manic energy and his
work
for work.
And
a lot of racism. I mean, surprisingly, like, really? Oh, ooh, God.
And yet, to a person, every comedian who interacts with Robin Williams says he's the nicest person in the world, which makes it impossible for me to hate him.
Well, he has to be.
Because comics hate everyone, but they all say Robin Williams is super nice, even while shitting on how unfunny he is.
I've seen Patch Adams. It's good.
So, Monsters U was a good surprise. The Heat, I thought, was a fairly pleasant surprise.
I went expecting nothing.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a big fan of almost anyone associated with that film. And it was so much better and so much funnier. And we may have mentioned this before, but I think it's worth mentioning that a lot of comedies this summer want to have it both ways, and you can't. And the way I've been putting it lately is you can't pull my heart out of my chest and squeeze it and then set fire to it and then send the ashes to my mother because the movie's so mean-spirited and ugly. And then in the last 10 minutes, try to warm my heart because I don't have a heart. You took my heart. You stole my heart. There's no heart to warm. There's something at the very end of the Heat that's very touching and earned.
Yeah.
It doesn't come across as a different color script page.
Yeah. One more. I thought I had one more happy surprise. Oh, The Conjuring. Which was a really good horror movie. I know, Douglas, you haven't had a chance to see it yet, but it's the kind of horror movie I think you would like, because it's a lot of squeaking doors.
I love that.
Like
kind of
people
stuff.
Moving stools.
Oh my God. I moved a stool this morning.
Was it a big stool? I have a quibble with The Conjuring. I think it's half of a great movie.
I didn't say it was a great movie.
At one point, about halfway...
This isn't We're the Millers.
A pleasant surprise, was the way that I described
at
it.
At one point, about halfway through, it takes a turn, and then I was like, oh, so they're not interested in carrying out... The first 45 minutes is exactly what he's describing. Atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Suspense.
I'm with you.
And
keep going.
That reminds me, a couple of days ago, I caught Woman in Black again on cable.
Yes.
I knew where this is going.
Even better than I originally thought.
Really?
I'm watching it again, Book of Eli Effect, and I'm like, this is so great. I know you think it should be 30 seconds shorter, but
perhaps.
The whole thing when he first gets to the estate, man, it doesn't get
That's all moving stools, am I right?
I like that The Conjuring didn't hate its characters, because so many horror movies do. And your next, to an extent... same thing. I mean, didn't seem to hate its characters, even though we're meant to laugh at them at certain points.
Sure.
We weren't rooting for them to die. I didn't think. I wasn't.
No,
The Conjuring is so good, it makes you forget Ron Livingston is in Office Space. And frequently when he shows up, I go, Office Space. So
he was really good in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Really
good. That's my point.
Yeah.
The bar is very high
because
you have to make me forget Office Space. And The Conjuring did.
Yeah, I thought the cast overall was really good. So that was a pleasant surprise. Having said that, do we now have to talk about the bad movies?
We can just wrap it up now.
I guess we could.
Summer? I hardly knew it.
What, Douglas, was the worst movie of the summer for you?
Why you start with me?
JB, what for you, what for Doug was the worst
Well, no,
movie?
I can answer that.
All right, let's have it.
I can answer it with a very...
It better be a movie that you saw like 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Okay,
go ahead.
I didn't hate... Well, I know you said at the beginning of the podcast that this is going to be a podcast in which you are trying not to...
I'm trying.
Right, be so negative and verp and whatnot.
Yeah.
I don't think... I had a little bit of, I believe, what JB had called a long time ago of, I'm at the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do have a newborn daughter, and it's been few and far between before the summer. Like, I didn't go, like, for a few months. As everyone who's had a kid knows, you don't go. You can't go. And I caught a lot of stuff on HBO and stuff, but, of course, that was probably from winter of last year. And then I played active catch-up in the last month or so, and I really tried to see a lot of stuff. And I think because... I missed it so much. Even the disappointments, like Star Trek Into Darkness, I didn't hate as much as everyone else. Even Man of Steel, I didn't hate as much as everyone else. Pacific Rim, I kind of liked, and I know a lot of people didn't like it. So I don't know if I have, like, a worst of the summer, unless I'm forgetting something, because honestly, it was so bad, in which case
Kick-Ass 2.
You know, it's funny about that, like, no joke, I've completely forgotten
about
that.
That's fine, so did America, but...
It's just a thing where... Because I'd seen all these things, and I know we record the podcast, we got everything off our chests And I have not, I swear to God, I have not thought about
it. And I only brought it up because I know what you've seen. Right. And while I didn't like some of those movies as much as you, I know that Kick-Ass 2 is way worse than Man of Steel.
Right.
I liked Pacific Rim 2. I think it was exactly what
they made a Pacific Rim 2?
As well.
The Return of Durant.
As well as the first one.
And I had a really fun time. When considering what the worst movie was, though.
Yes. That's a hard one.
On the one hand, we had Kick-Ass 2, which was mind-numbingly bad. I think at this point we can talk about the scene where they kill all the cops and just tone-deaf. And I think boring, that was, that was
like, I never, a scene where they kill cops, I've never been more bored and offended.
If you're going to kill 10 cops...
Make it exciting, damn it.
Yeah, do something.
Give me a thrill.
That a lot of films that I hated this summer had the same tone. And this is a problem, and I think films need to address it. Meanness and ugliness is not funny.
No.
It's not. It might be funny to a sociopath, and maybe that's how they see their audience. So on the one hand, we have Kick-Ass 2, which, oh, how the mighty have fallen. And in my other hand, I have The Lone Ranger. So in my left hand, I have 2 pounds of cow shit. And in my right hand, I have two pounds of pig shit.
And I didn't like The Lone Ranger either. But to me, The Lone Ranger falls in that Man of Steel, Star Trek Into Darkness category, which is big movies that don't work. But The Lone Ranger did still have the opening train sequence and the ending train sequence and some beautiful photography. So there are things that I can point to that I can say, okay, but it has this. Whereas Kick-Ass 2, Grown Ups 2, Planes. I saw movies that were so much worse than even The Lone Ranger that I keep it almost more in that middle-low category.
I think part middle of my low. Problem, I think part of my problem with Lone Ranger might have been part of your problem with Star Trek. When I was a kid, I was a big Lone Ranger fan.
Yeah.
So what they did to it
bothered
me.
Sure. It's a bad movie, I think.
Because there's hints in this summer's Lone Ranger of what it could have been. Mm-hmm. And the hints are the opening sequence and the ending sequence.
Right.
And not to have Johnny Depp in it at all.
The Lone Ranger is such an interesting movie to me. I have not seen it, so I...
That's why it's interesting to you.
Right. Well, no, it's because obviously this is the
Once
summer...
Once you see it, it's going to be far less interesting.
This summer is of blockbusters and of comic book movies and of space movies and of science fiction, kind of with Pacific Rim a little bit. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you've got Gore Verbinski saying, let's make the Lone Ranger remake. And it seems so tone deaf to the trends of the culture right now that even the marketing, I'm like, this... Listen, there's something to be said for taking a chance and putting something out there that is brand new. Like, we haven't seen a Western. We haven't seen this sort of throwback movie. You're pointing to me. What?
I don't want to interrupt. Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah. That's what the they president. Did.
That's they
when that came out.
It was like, they haven't made a pirate movie in so long. Right. And this it seemed like they were taking such a gamble, and it paid off, and the movie really works. And so Lone Ranger could have been that. So it's not... Yeah.
But even now, I completely agree. I think the marketing, though, for Lone Ranger was so tone-deaf even to what they were trying to deliver. And again, I don't know what... If you're talking about the opening sequences and the closing sequences with the trains are so awesome. I got none of that from the trailer. The trailer just looked to me like Johnny Depp plane dress-up and a lot of beautiful photography.
There's one shot in the trailer from the train sequence at the end that actually made me not want to see the movie.
Was it the one where the train is, like, going up in the air? Is that... Am I...
There's a train, and he's, like, swinging on a rope. And he's still on his horse, and then he's galloping in the train on the horse. And I even think the trailer was prepared before the movie was finished.
Okay.
Because my memory of that shot in the trailer is the physics of it are impossible.
Yeah, right.
And in the finished film, Buster Keaton would be proud of that train sequence at the end because there's all these things that are worked out with the physics of the motion.
Okay.
That's impressive. And I don't remember the trailer shot, impossible, being in the film, in the finished film.
So, yeah, just my takeaway from that was it just seemed, when it came out and didn't perform and people didn't like it, I'm like, well, I don't really want to see. Like, why do I want to see this thing that I wasn't interested in the first place?
And yet I don't think, you know, for it being the disaster that it was financially. Even
what you just said about the closing sequence, I kind of want to see that.
Right.
And I guess if it has that, it can't be the worst thing of the summer.
But it's not going to stop anyone from making another terrible $200 million.
Did it do well?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. Disney supposedly is taking a $200 million loss on it. So now, of course, it's being mentioned in the same sentence as John Carter, but John Carter is, like, so sincere and entertaining. And I know we just keep beating this John Carter drum, but it breaks my heart to see a movie that wants to do so well take a big loss and be made fun of. And then this movie that sort of is condescending and is trying to trick you to be mentioned as the same kind of movie, it seems unfair.
In The Lone Ranger, a character's head is dragged through shit, and then it becomes a 10-minute running joke that apparently his head smells and is attracting flies. That's the level of the middle of the Lone Ranger.
Also, a guy gets his heart pulled out and eaten.
I got
a PG-13 Disney movie called The Lone Ranger.
And you watch the sequence where the heart is eaten, and you can tell that this bounced back and forth to the MPAA, and it was a matter of taking frames out.
See, but I bet it didn't even, because everybody involved is so powerful.
Yeah.
It got a pass, and it shouldn't have.
I'm thinking of an indie film where...
Oh, forget it.
Hey, as people have pointed out,
right.
If it's a horror film, forget it. If it's Saving Private Ryan, anything goes.
I want to go back now to the middle section. Not the great.
Yes.
We're in the bad section now. We're in the stuff that's not good.
Yeah.
But the middle section, the sweet spot of...
Yeah.
Fine. Of meh. I saw Elysium today.
Yes.
And I liked it. Did you see it?
Yeah.
Did you see it?
No.
It
damn it.
Is.
Do you want to talk about Grown Ups 2 some more, guys?
You saw that for your other job. We understand.
My other job is a masochist.
But I want to say something specific about...
For a second, I thought you saw it with Charlie, and it was your second job as a parent. But that was Planes.
That would be Planes.
Okay.
Which I also hated.
There's a scene. I won't say what character, who it was.
It's Matt Damon. Go ahead.
It's a big scene in which it's not. I swear it's not. A character gets his face blown off in graphic detail, as I'm not going to say detail. I'll say detail.
Yeah.
And they spoil it. I mean, I won't tell you who it is, but
I know who it is, but
yeah, it's they regenerate his face, and it's easily one of the most graphic things I've seen in a movie in years. I mean, there's like horror stuff, I saw Your Next, and there's some graphic stuff in Your Next, but this is like it's so realistic. That's the thing that really.
What's Elysium rated?
R.
Oh, okay.
But still, it's like
By the way, it could have gotten a PG-13 this summer.
It blew me away. But I actually liked Elysium. I think the world he creates is enough almost that you forgive some of the missteps.
See, I thought District 9 was kind of incredible, and although there's people who quibble about that one, and I thought it set the bar high. I thought Elysium was again half of a good movie because the first 45 minutes is establishing world.
Right, it's.
And then the second 45 minutes, it's like, oh, that's all you're going to... Oh, it's just going to be this
Whenever
now?
It becomes like Maria Conchita Alonso with Matt Damon...
There's nothing funny about a dickless moron with a battery.
Right. As soon as it's become that girl, Frey, and Matt Damon, it's a little like...
Sorry, you lost me at Frey.
Her name is Frey. His name is Max.
And
she's got a kid who has leukemia, and it's a little more like, you know, like, it's interesting, and you can't... That's the heart of the movie, but it's not... You don't care. You don't care about it.
Right.
Because District 9 kept unfolding and becoming this other twisted thing. I kept thinking there would be more to Elysium, and there's less.
Take issue with, too, because they do spend the first half hour, 45 minutes constructing this world that is, I mean, it's depressing, it's gritty, it's fascinating. And then there's weird shortcuts where I'm so sick of, and Neil Blomkamp is so good at world creation.
Yeah.
And, the technology and all that stuff is so wonderful to watch. Don't have a fucking scene where it's dystopic and people are huddled around a trash can fire.
Yeah,
I'm sick of it. I'm like, no, that's shorthand that I think that's bullshit. Like,
that's the chicken on the bus.
It absolutely right. Like, oh, we're in Mexico. There's a chicken on a bus.
I haven't read anything about this, but Elysium impressed me as a film that had a half an hour cut out of it.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. Damn it. We all need to get on the same page.
I thought you would go because it's in the IMAX theater, but it's not in 3D.
Right. No, I really wanted to, and I went to see Spectacular Now instead. But
you made the right choice.
Probably.
But that's an, I would say that's in the middle spot of like, yeah, it's better than Man of Steel. It's better than Star Trek for sure.
And I want to say real
quick, but you want it to be great.
About Star Trek, the further away I get from it, I don't like it more. But again, my objections are not because I like Star Trek, although that's partially my objection. But I know on the podcast I probably spent a lot of time being angry about the twist and sort of the marketing and the fact that they do nothing with it, and that's all garbage. The more I think of it, the thing that I'm left with in terms of why I don't like that movie, the residue that I have, is that it ends in the exact same place as the first movie, and that I cannot forgive that we just spent another 2.5 hours with this crew, and it ends with them like, okay, we're together now, let's go on our first mission. What the fuck have we been doing?
Well, if we can get money making placeholders.
Yeah, that's inexcusable to me.
And I look at this list in front of me, and I think one of my big takeaways from the summer is I'm tired of paying full price for half a movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So many movies work for the first 45 minutes and then just turn to sand.
Well, because I think it's easy to deliver promise. It's harder to deliver on that promise.
It's easier for world creation. I think about Lost a lot, the TV show Lost, where it's just...
As like, we all do.
Oh, my God.
The first season, the first two seasons are like, oh, my God, there's so much being set up. And let's take a step back from Lost, but just you set so much stuff up that's so promising. It's like, wow, what a...
No,
interesting.
That's a great example of what we're talking about.
Specific to Lost, I remember Patrick said something where it's like season three, and they come across a statue that's gone. It's got four toes or something.
Three toes,
and it's like you realize at that point they will never answer any of these all the questions we have. They'll answer maybe 25% of them.
Right.
And honestly, like I want everything answered. I want to know.
There was a time when Patrick here would buy me a DVD box set for Christmas. And his taste was unerring because I had never seen these shows, and he would plop it down and it would become my new favorite show. And of course on DVD, there's no commercials and you can binge watch it.
Sure.
And one of those was Lost, and it was just so great. And I can still remember when I stopped watching Lost.
You didn't finish? You didn't go through the end?
Oh no, I don't know if I've ever brought this up on the podcast before. The day after the season finale, someone posted something so great on the internet that I wrote it down, and it's still in my classroom, and I know where it is because I'm going to use that. They called the season finale of Lost 2.5 hours of slow motion bullshittery. Back to Lost.
Oh, so Man of Steel. Sorry.
That I stopped watching, and I think this was season three, when they were put in cages,
and
I called it the Planet of the Apes season.
Oh, God. Because
it resembled the TV series.
But I
want to
go back and
Apes.
Watch that first season, just like all these movies where it's like, oh, man, I'm so curious. Like, these characters are so interesting and it has so much promise and so intriguing. And then, like any story, and it doesn't matter if it's drama or action or comedy, I think people don't know how to write an ending.
Right.
They think, well, things have to resolve and the people have to get together, so we just have to get there as clumsily as possible, forget about all the cool stuff that we've been dreaming about for 20 years in the creation of this idea. We now need to execute the middle third to get to the stupid ending.
Well, here's the thing. First of all, Lindelof was behind that, so don't forget that. And second of all, I think that show in its first two seasons was so popular out of control of what anyone expected that ABC said, keep it going.
Yeah.
Because the whole time they kept saying, oh, we know the end. We know the end. I don't think they did.
Well, now they've said that they didn't.
Well, it was obvious.
Right.
Because they even made a joke that during the first season, everyone was like, it's heaven, right? They're in heaven.
Right.
They're in heaven. And even though it's not exactly that, when we got to the conclusion, it was a lot like that.
Yeah. Well, it just goes to anyone who writes a story, be it just a short story, a poem or whatever, the ending is hard. You got to, find the conclusion that satisfies you and satisfies the reader and doesn't trade in on the values of what you've established. And a lot of times the shorthand is, well, we'll just have the people get together, or we'll just have the, so-and-so.
Right.
That character is dispendable. Dispendable?
With comedy.
Expendable.
With comedy, it's easy. There'll be a wedding or a chase.
Right.
Let's talk about Man of Steel real quick, because speaking about knowing the ending, Zack Snyder this week or last week kind of came out and said that all the mass death and destruction was deliberate. And I forget the exact quote, but it's really boneheaded. It was like, because in Greek myths, mass death was a metaphor for tragedy or something. It's like, that's not a metaphor, but okay.
And what little I know about Greek myth or Greek tragedy, that's not the case.
That there wasn't constant mass death?
No, that it's there's one tragic hero, and he undergoes some sort of fall. I'm thinking of Oedipus. Oedipus puts stainless steel spikes right through his eyes. The whole of Greece doesn't fall. I mean, it's him. He's the one who's punished.
Well, the whole of Greece. His mom was really hot. That Oedipus could be awesome because that's Man of Steel.
And my memory of Man of Steel is I was really looking forward to it because after the darkness of the Batman movies, I thought maybe in some way we could return to the sweetness and light of the Christopher Reeve. Because I've said this hundreds of times, Superman is very different than Batman.
Yeah.
And Man of Steel just depressed me. It was so dark and so ugly and so off the mark of what I think Superman is. The only thing I thought was interesting is the thought that he's an alien. That he, you could see him as the other.
Which the movie does try to play with a little bit. I mean, I have to give the movie some credit. There are certain things in it that kind of work. And again, a lot of people love it and went crazy for it and said, that's my Superman.
And I love Kevin Costner.
In the movie?
Yeah.
Really? He was fine.
I like him in general.
Yeah.
You gotta see Tin Cup.
There were things about the movie that I thought were okay. That to me was a big disappointment, only because the marketing was good. I really liked the trailers, and I keep pulling for Zack Snyder.
I remember when the trailer first came out, I think I even wrote about this on the site, where I was like, I know people were kind of criticizing Zack Snyder's choice as much as they're criticizing Ben Affleck as Batman.
Sure, yeah.
And I was saying, no, Zack Snyder, give him a chance. Like, Sucker Punch was a weird little movie, and, you know, he can make something out of this, and it turned out...
I love Sucker Punch. I also thought the product placements in Man of Steel were just...
Yeah.
Like, parodies of product placements.
Yeah. That's, you know, just...
When they pulled out Nuprin and they said, little, yellow,
that's different. Just a sad sign of where we are going.
Look, they're destroying the Dunkin' Donuts!
There really was that, though.
Yeah.
But it Sears. Was it a Sears?
Yeah.
Okay. Some movie had a 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was Man of Steel or maybe it was like Thor. There was a movie where 7-Eleven kept showing up.
Yeah, there was.
Super 8. Might have been Super 8 even.
There was a whole bunch of really obvious product placements in Man of Steel.
Yeah. So that was a disappointment to me. Honestly, White House Down was kind of a disappointment to me, just because I like Channing Tatum. I kind of like Roland Emmerich's stupidity.
Yeah, it had the promise to be a stupid, fun
it
movie.
It looked like a diehard movie, and he just can't stop with, like, the bad attempts at humor, and the action was shitty, and the whole thing really looked like it was shot in front of a green screen. Mm-hmm. Every outdoor scene, I'm pretty positive they shot the whole thing in front of green screens.
There's a scene where cars chase each other on the White House lawn.
Yeah.
It looks like a video game.
It's awful.
And it's edited poorly.
And the whole thing costs like $150 million. And there's another movie where
you're never sure where either car is. And
you can't believe the levels of violence in this fucking PG-13 movie. It's insane to me.
Even in the trailers, I know, and this is something that is happening more and more often, obviously, because they're putting trailers out so early for these bigger movies that sometimes the effects aren't done. So you cross your fingers and you hope, man, when this comes out, I really hope that looks better, kind of like with Lone Ranger. But there was a helicopter shot in the trailer of White House Down where I'm like, oh, it looks like Birdemic quality.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plus, Patrick, I must remind you, it's not violence, it's action.
Oh, right. Sorry. Pacific Rim, I kind of put at the high end of that
of
middle.
Your disappointments?
Like,
your disappointments or the middle?
Well, these are all sort of disappointments, but Pacific Rim was okay, you know?
Yeah, I liked it.
I was probably a little higher on it when we did the podcast than I am now, because I haven't really thought about it since.
It's not Star Wars for the new generation,
as I was promised.
I still wish it wasn't always raining, because I didn't think that added anything other than, oh, did they do this to hide some of the effect?
Kaiju. You know that, what's his name?
50 Shades of Grey.
He's in 50 Shades. What's his name?
50 Shades of Kaiju.
Michael.
Charlie Hunnam.
No, I'm sure it's, I'm pretty sure it's Michael. Charlie Hunnam?
Yeah.
He's in 50 Shades of Grey with Dakota Johnson, Don Johnson's daughter.
That's right.
The girl that was in Social Network. Okay, this will make the podcast timely.
And we should...
the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Bring this up, because I know you and I are of differing opinions on this. At the low end of the middle garbage, I would include World War Z, which I know you liked more than I did.
Talking to other people, I guess it's indefensible.
Only because it's dead. It was not the disaster it looked like from the trailers and reading all the stories ahead of time. I really thought this was going to be the worst movie of the summer. It was not.
There were parts of it I enjoyed.
Yeah.
I didn't sit there and feel insulted. I liked the central metaphor of zombies as plague, as disease. I think you and I both said...
Isn't that just all
zombies? No, I don't think so.
Really?
Not sort of a worldwide thing.
Okay.
And also, both of us said that one little quiet scene inside the pharmacy.
Yes.
I thought...
Oh, guys, spoilers. Not many look out for pharmacy scenes in every movie.
That... The
just,
film,
it's just World War II.
The film needed more of that.
Yeah. Oh, humanity, you mean? Not just Brad Pitt shows up to a major city. A zombie outbreak happens just as Brad Pitt shows up. He runs around and he escapes with a few other people. Lands in another major city. The zombie outbreak happens just as Brad Pitt shows up. They do this 5 times. And then there's sort of a quieter... The last act, which is all the stuff they reshot.
I was going to say, that screams, this doesn't seem like part of the same movie.
Right.
It's very different.
But I was glad, after sitting through the same sequence 5 times, that this has a different energy to it.
That there's some of the stuff in the hospital that's honestly suspenseful.
Right. It's a movie that satisfies no one, though, because even the World War Z graphic novel readers were offended. And they said the only thing that's in common with this and the graphic novel is the title. There's nothing familiar.
I thought it started as a novel.
Novel, yeah.
Novel?
It's a novel.
Max Brooks.
I mean, like, it's graphic.
And again, a movie that shouldn't have a PG-13 because it's way too violent for a PG-13, but also hampered by the PG-13 because there are certain sequences that might have been effective if you knew what the fuck was going on. There's a scene where Brad Pitt has a bayonet stuck in a zombie, and he needs to... get away, basically, but he can't because this thing is stuck in, like, a zombie's head, and something's coming towards him, and he's trying to pull it out, but because it's PG-13, it all happens out of frame, so you don't understand why he can't move.
Right.
You don't know what's going on. It was, and maybe because it came out in the summer of destruction, maybe it left a particularly bad taste in my mouth because it was yet another movie where cities are leveled so that Brad Pitt can find his family.
Here's my last-ditch attempt to justify my opinion.
You don't have to.
Me likey zombies.
you still, I mean, in all seriousness, you still like zombies. It seems like right now it is zombie overload. You're still, I mean...
And that's interesting because I attended Horror Hound Weekend. Wait, I'm confusing the names of the shows. Flashback Weekend, which Patrick attended to, and I went the last day, because I was at other things the other days, and I got to sit through the George Romero Q&A, which was fascinating, and I wish it had gone on for an hour and a half. That was one of the big questions they asked George. You started this, because before you, it was Bela Lugosi in Haiti. And they said, aren't you disgusted by how clogged the marketplace is and stuff, and... he had some interesting things to say about that. There are too many zombies.
What else? What
was in cycles?
Sure. I mean, but we could also argue right now we're in the midst of like a vampire thing too. I mean, it's everything right now, and that's something I was thinking about just to myself the other day about how you've got and you've talked about on the podcast. Everyone on the podcast has talked about how specifically you and Mike, 15 years ago. If there was an Avengers, if there's a this, if there's a, you know, whatever, I am the happiest person in the world. And now that it's here, I'm not happy. Now that there's vampire movie you get obviously is Twilight.
That is my favorite Mike quote. But when you look at the history of horror films, one of the things you might conclude is it goes in cycles, but vampires never go away.
Yeah.
Vampires are a constant, which I think you could say something.
There's an equation here, I think.
That there's a sociology to it.
This summer... I think last summer was when I really thought that was the breaking point, especially for the comic book movie, because you had Amazing Spider-Man. I think Man of Steel at that time was supposed to come out last summer, plus Dark Knight Rises, plus Avengers. It was like you had the 4 biggest coming out in the same summer. And obviously, it didn't happen. It's only begat more comic book movies. And I'm just, especially after this summer, I'm tired of them. And I know somebody has commented before, I'm not tired of comic book movies. I'm tired of bad comic book movies. And I guess I should make that distinction as well, that if they were all good, I probably wouldn't feel this way. And yet there's still a sameness to all of them because they all tell an origin story and they all have the similar kind of special effects and there's a giant robot at the end. I'm tired of the thing that bums me out and that I really started to feel this summer is, again, the idea of franchise filmmaking. And I feel like this summer we had very few original movies, especially the bigger ones. I'm tired of reading release dates for sequels that are 4 and 5 years out. I don't need to know that Amazing Spider-Man 4 is coming out in 2017.
The first one was a piece of shit.
I can't believe there's even a second. They're going to make 4 of these things now?
Yeah.
And who liked the first one? I know people
liked
the
first one. It's a depressing podcast.
Because it was a depressing summer, and some people have been very nice in the comments and said, like, you're not too negative, you know, you try and say positive things. Because I had that interaction with the guy at Comic-Con who said, you've gotten way more negative since. And my response to him was, well, the movies have gotten worse. And I know we were just talking about this in terms of the patio before we started the podcast where the guy said, I'm shutting down because movies have gotten bad.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to just blame it on the movies because I still saw enough things this summer that I liked enough that, of course, I'm still excited about movies and I still love going to the movies. It's still my favorite thing in the world. But this was a depressing summer.
Well, it'd be different, too, I think, if it wasn't. The things you were let down by are things that you hold dear, too. You like comic book stuff. You like these bigger types of movies. If it was just an action movie that was trumped up and built up and everyone's excited about and it was a failure, it'd be disappointing, but it wouldn't, like, color everything. But because it's Star Trek, which we all love, because it's a superhero movie, which we all love, like a new Superman, oh, my God, that's great. It's not good, and it didn't deliver.
And there seems to be a sameness to the way that all of the movies were bad.
Yes.
And that's maybe the part that depresses me the most, because it means that there's a formula now that studios are really putting into place, but it's a bad formula. And the movies are still making money, so they're not really inclined to change it.
And I'd say the answer to this is that we need to become more selective. But I think all of us want to be part of what's going on.
Of course, you're right.
And to be plugged in and not to be that guy who turns up his nose and say, well, I would never be caught dead in that because, you know, sometimes you're pleasantly surprised.
Well, we all know, like, you saw Grown Ups 2 for a job.
Yes.
We all know we can skip, let's make a point to skip this. And the other stuff, you do want to be part of that conversation, the cultural whatever. But there's some things you just don't know. You have to find out, like, after the fact if that was good or bad or whatever. But some things you can definitely say, so we have to be more.
And there wasn't necessarily, except for Grown Ups 2, and I would say even World War Z, which I turned out to be wrong about. I didn't think there was an indication, based on the marketing, that any of these movies were going to be really bad. World War Z being the opposite, that I thought it was going to be really bad. And it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. So I'm glad I went to see it and gave it a chance because it was a little better than I thought. But I wouldn't have skipped any of these movies based on the marketing. You know?
A critique with this formula, though, too. I mean, not a critique with the formula, but there is a formula. And what you've said, what you both said is absolutely true. There's a formula, and the end result is disappointing.
Yes.
But a lot of that disappointment for me, and I'm only speaking for me, is it's boring. It doesn't wow me the way I want to be wowed.
But think about what you're saying is boring. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's fucked up that we could sit through Man of Steel.
That you made that boring.
And say, that was boring. How is that possible?
Right.
Movies can do anything now. I mean, anything.
Because if you punch a guy across the horizon into a building for 10 minutes, and it just goes back and forth, it's that Van Helsing effect. If it's just two superhumans knocking each other against big, hard objects, and then they get back up again and fight.
It was the same in Avengers, too. Like, when Hulk is smashing Loki, it's like, there's no damage. And it's just, I don't know.
At least they had the good sense to sort of make that a joke.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole, and that's why I think Avengers works way more than any, because there's no humor in this stuff, too.
And you're not invested in, even if they were bouncing around off buildings, if I gave a shit about one of the guys bouncing off a building.
No, I disagree. Because I still think that these bouncing off the movies, it's like it's more a showing off of the technology. Like, look at what this 23-year-old you know, USC graduate can do on this awesome $50,000 computer.
Right.
But we can, why make him go 5 feet when we can make him go 50 feet and smash through a wall? And look at all the dust particles flying, and the beam of light from the sun going through the clouds is perfectly physically accurate.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it's good, though, because it still is defying anything that's logical, and it doesn't make sense to me. I don't care about this.
Speaking of the sameness, a few weeks ago, there was an article on Slate that I would recommend to people. Apparently, there's one of these books about story structure that goes way beyond Robert McKee and actually dictates number of pages until a certain thing. It's called Save the Cat or Attack the Cat. And it was
Which ones are totally opposing things?
There's a cat in the title.
I'm going to get it wrong. Attack a cat that needs saving.
The author...
I'll take that pussy.
The journalist looked at several modern films...
Please end the podcast now.
And suggested that...
That's what people...
That has become the Bible in Hollywood. That is what is ruining films. And then, spoiler alert, he indicates that he wrote the column itself using the precepts of this structure. Hmm. And... clearly, one of the things audiences want when they go to the movies is to be surprised. And is every movie going to end?
We're all wired, even if you don't know the page number, or that we're all wired to react to beats. It's the same with comedies. Like, you hear a joke, here's the setup, here's the punchline. Even if the punchline is not funny, your inclination is to laugh at it because you've been programmed to do that. So with movies, it's the same thing.
I only laugh when someone says something and then there's that sound of a record scratch.
There's a book by Thomas Lennon and Robert Ben-Gurant where they write...
Yeah.
They have written, I think, Night at the Museum, a couple other things.
The Pacifier.
Right.
Herbie Fully Loaded.
And they even write, they say, this is not a book for an independent writer who wants to write...
This is not how to write art.
Right. This is how to write what the studio... And the truth be told, the studio is full of people that are not artistic, that don't care about... art, that don't care about any of that stuff, and it's they care about, and they do, they'll, you know, number of pages and this and that, and they do all their projections, their algorithms that give you budget, whatever, and it's that's what we're at. But thankfully we've got the indie movies, or we've got that second tier, and you've got some artists that are working in the system. Christopher Nolan obviously made 3 Batman movies, but he's still making some, you know,
right, diversity. And that's one of the reasons why I feel like maybe I was a little bit too hard on Iron Man 3, because for all of Iron Man 3's flaws, it's still very much in the voice of Shane Black, who is an artist, you know.
Right.
He makes a specific kind of art, but it does still feel like a person's vision instead of a committee of studio notes.
Which is one of the things that made it good. There is a ray of hope. My son's at AFI. Give it a couple years. I'm just saying.
I don't know. It's nothing against your son. I worry about
I almost feel like it, I mean,
the next generation.
No, no, your son is very talented. It's
yes.
Not, but he's up against this system
that's
going to be. So I'm hoping that this next wave, and with technology the way it is, with everyone can put something on YouTube or Vimeo or whatever, it's all on demand. You can self-finance. The technology is out there where it's so much cheaper. Red cameras cost a fraction of what a Super 8 16mm camera cost 15 years ago, and people can do it. Now, but you've got everyone now trained to make the shit that they're watching.
Right.
But then you also run into another problem, which I would argue is endemic to theater in major cities. There is more theater than there is an audience. Or in the words of Bill Maher, everybody wants to be the show. Nobody wants to see the show.
I remember when the AMC that's in our neighborhood first opened, they still have 30 screens. And I'm like, oh, my God, they're going to be, I mean, not 30 separate movies, but they can show everything, independent movies. And what it is, and it still is, they have some kind of, they might have some limited release stuff, but it's 7 screens of Man of Steel and 4 of Pacific Rim, and that's where they make their money. So I get it.
And
I'm not a dummy.
I've been saying this for years, and Century Theaters this fall is once again starting the classic film series. Every Sunday night, Wednesday afternoon, and Wednesday night, they show a classic film. At a 30-plex, can't we have one screen for older films?
And you even, like, gussy it up and make it like the independent room, you know, or whatever it is.
even once a week. You know, they tried to do those midnight movies years ago. I mean, that was over 10 years ago, but that's how we saw the world's worst print of Friday the 13th. Just other options would be nice with 30 screens. And Adam Risky, Adam Risky had said last week, you know, you can keep your Man of Steel because I'll just see stuff on video on demand.
He started swearing up a storm. Listen to that one.
And I get exactly what he's saying, because that's kind of what we're talking about, that blockbusters are broken, but luckily there are these smaller films and artists who are hopefully going to save us. My only problem with that is that I like big movies. I like summer movies. They can be fun and very entertaining.
And we remember a big movie called Jurassic Park.
Right.
That
was the best movie I saw this summer.
I went back to see it in 3D to see it.
3D's garbage, but it's so good.
And I just marveled. Movies used to be something.
And that was in the 90s. We were not talking about the 70s or the 60s or the 40s. Like, that was 20 years ago.
And obviously we're picking something pretty special. We're not just picking a random film from the 90s off the shelf, but...
But at the time, it was based on a populist novel.
That was a popcorn movie.
Exactly. I mean, people didn't say Jurassic Park was fucking Lawrence of Arabia. It was like, well, it's this populist novel being made by this populist director, this dumb summer movie with big special effects. But, like, no, that movie kicks ass.
Well, don't you think it's cyclical, too? Just like you said, zombies were... I mean, right now we're in a glut. The summer concert, the summer movies season is sucked. Fuck movies, as they say. But it's got to get better. I mean, it's got to.
But there's no such thing as a pattern, because last year we talked on and on at our end of the year show. Boy, it was a great year for good movies, and everything we saw, like, maybe wasn't the best movie, but it was good, and I had fun. There were things to like in so many movies. And so you think, hey, movies are on an upswing. And then you get to this year, which is two steps back from last year. So you can't ever...
So we can only go up, is what you're saying.
I'm not
we
sure.
Can't ever feel comfortable.
It's a positive thing. I'm not sure if they know who the audience is anymore, because obviously now we're getting the trailers for the fall award winners.
Yeah.
And I went back to see The World's End. And they can't figure out what trailers to show before The World's End. I swear to God, it was a horror movie
and Bad Grandpa.
August, Osage County, and Bad Grandpa.
Right.
So
it's all over the place.
You people like good, funny
breakout.
Okay, one trailer will be good. One trailer will be funny. It was ludicrous. What? Who do you think I am?
They know who you are. You'll see all those movies.
Very sad, very sad. On the plus side, next summer, Fast and Furious 7.
Is it really? They're going every year.
Wow. Next summer.
So, okay, now let's focus on the positives.
It's been fast, right?
We started there.
Stuntman Mike.
Yeah, Stuntman Mike. Who's Stuntman Mike?
Stuntman.
Being directed by James Wan, who made The Conjuring, another movie I liked. So, things are coming together.
There you go.
Movies are great. I feel good again,
guys. Can only go up, honestly. You've got, next year, some movies.
Better. More movies will be released than either good or bad.
We know the release dates already. We know who's cast in all these movies. So, God.
There's that new column on that website, F This Movie, where that fat guy has vowed to be more positive for a year.
All right, yeah.
I don't think
you don't want us to do that?
Some of us have tried to be positive for 3 years, all right? Some of us.
And by the way, I don't really think I'm fat.
The only thing I'm positive about is that I'm very negative.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We're really sorry. If you want to kill yourself, just have your family bill the bullet to fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com, because this was a dark, dark episode.
Toast in a tub.
3 more weeks till Scary Movie Month, right?
Yeah, I'm excited.
So things are looking up.
I'm starting to record stuff already off the cable, so just to watch.
Yeah? Great. Anything good?
No.
Okay, good. Anyway, we'll see you next week, guys.